You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Radio Public, or at our website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for November 8th, 2019. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the Illinois headquarters of Mike Bloomberg 2020, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal. And on a completely unrelated note, we'd like to welcome our newest sponsor, Mike Bloomberg. Mike Bloomberg, he's rich. What more do you need to know? Yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah, we figured if Steve Schmidt could suddenly pretend to grow conscience and then get a never-Trumper gig on MSNBC and then sell out those principles without breaking stride when Howard Schultz waved a lot of money in his face, and then when Schultz cratered, re-reverse himself and resume his gig at MSNBC with nobody asking any questions, well, we here at the Cornfield Resistance could let Bloomberg pay for our grass and our groceries and maybe a new house and maybe a vacation house and then come back.
He's kidding.
And then come back in a few months as if it never happened. And you would all understand because this is just how politics is done.
Yeah, that's not it. Bitches.
But you know what talks more than money, honey?
No.
Coffee.
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 And we would like to thank Bart for the coffee.
Bart sent us a bunch of coffee, ground coffee, and some macadamia nuts, everything from Hawaii. It's very delicious. We had a Kona coffee for breakfast this morning. It was very, very good.
We got the Howard Schultz gift basket, basically, but it wasn't Starbucks. It was hand-selected by Bart, who sent it to us from halfway across
the
globe.
It's very, really very good. That. Thank you. Thank you. And it's delicious. We also wanted to thank our friend of the pod, Barry Maurer, who has a book he's put together called Deadly Delusions. It's really an art book. He does selfies.
It's a graphic novel almost.
Selfies with farm animals, and then turns that into a comic book where he is talking with the farm animals who can talk about political issues. And you know, it reminds me a lot of Zayas Nation. If you're an old school blogger and you know Zayas, Dr. Zayas,
I remember it well. Yeah.
It is a lot like that, except this is with farm animals and very well done. And he's looking for a publisher. I hope he finds one.
One of these days, we're going to do a podcast of nothing but people who no longer blog, who we knew back in the day.
That's true.
It'll go well over
I
1 hour.
I miss Zayas. He was very funny. I met him at face-to-face at a Americans United for the Separation of Church and State conference. And boy, that was old school. That was a long time ago. Long, long time ago.
Well, and this means that we actually have, you know, archives and memory and history that we can draw on.
Yeah.
Just FYI, I'd like to thank everyone for all of your thoughts and your energies and your prayers and everything else you directed in my way. I'm back from visiting my hippie mom in Arizona, where she lives on the same property as my sister. Brother and I converged there, and we were there for several days. She's doing much better. She is still homebound and will require a lot of
medical attention.
Well,
she's out of the hospital, too. I mean, there's a deeper crisis that went on. But
yes,
the point is, she's out of the hospital. She's home. She can't run around as much and do all the yoga stuff, everything she wants to do, because her energy level is phenomenal.
She has a lot of and the same time, just FYI, this is just housekeeping. Mm-hmm. My sister's husband had a very serious heart problem at exactly
crisis.
The same time.
Yeah.
And they also had identity theft at exactly the same time. Somebody, got his computer, got their information. So almost overnight, my sister was dealing with both of the other adults on the property, both hospitalized and or unable to drive or do anything really errand related, and dealing with the banks and crisis and so on and so forth. So it was a good thing we went out there. And I thank God for Medicare.
Honestly.
Honest to God. The number of services that are provided for someone in this position, it required essentially all of us filling out forms and making calls and making appointments and setting up things and making sure there's no overlap and making sure the wording is correct and making sure her long-term insurance doesn't overlap or does overlap. But that was all paperwork. Mm-hmm. The actual care being provided was wonderful. The people are terrific. They're full of good advice. They're professionals. They know what they're doing. They come to our house. And this is a house in the mountains. Yeah. This is a house where on Halloween, they put out pumpkins so the javelinas can come and knock them over and eat them. It would be wild boars
in the mountains of Arizona. Yeah.
This is a property where snakes fight with squirrels on their front porch. And usually the squirrel wins, which our squirrels are whips compared to the squirrels out there. So, but it's covered. And it was mostly a matter of just making sure all of the various overlapping doctors and home care specialists and therapists were all scheduled correctly and not overlapping. And someone was present and then my sister got, 5 minutes.
She got a little bit of respite care for 3 days. She needed that very much. So we love her. And we love your mom.
Yeah.
Love your brother. Took lots of pictures. So,
I had to answer a lot of cross-examination about why I didn't bring back hoodies for the girls.
Oh yeah. Why don't you bring us back hoodies from Arizona?
Because I went straight there and I went straight back and that's, this was not a hoodie trip. No,
usually you bring back hoodies of some variety, but that's okay. They have a lot of hoodies. I'm not worried about lack of hoodies upstairs in our house.
But let me tell you, one of the things, despite health concerns and mom being on oxygen and so on, that we got to do, which is something my family has always done, back to when we were little children sitting at the middle, was gather around and tell funny stories.
Yeah.
And crack each other up. This is I come from a long line of storytelling goofballs and hillbillies and rogue Irishmen and so on and so forth. So whatever traits I have that you hear in my voice, I come by honestly. And that was extremely balming to my soul.
Well,
just sitting around talking about, talking shit about ancestors who are no longer here and just having fun. And we always tell the best stories on ourselves. We race to the middle to say, look at the stupid thing I just did, and try to crack everyone up. So,
everyone in your family is on the same side politically, so that helps a lot.
Oh, yeah.
There were times while you were gone when I could hear the eye rolls from your sister as you brought up politics in her house.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I strove mightily and succeeded mostly to keep politics completely out of everything.
There was too much going on for you to start bloviating about. And by the way, this is what Driftglass thinks about what's happening. Yes, right.
But you know who brought it up? My mom did. Oh, come on. Yeah. And mostly centered around her and my sisters, one of their guilty pleasures, watching Dancing with the Stars.
And so you have to get all into the Sean Spicer cheating scandal. Him telling people in your mother's time zone to vote before they've seen the dancing. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Oh, 20 times.
Yeah.
All of which means I've been out of the loop for most of the last week. And I will tell you, stepping back into the fire hose of crazy is bracing and weird. And just even taking a few days out of it and walking back into this just sort of bombardment of smoking guns from the White House. Absolutely corrupt, deliberately corrupt and corrosive and abusive and degenerate behavior on the part of Republicans defending them. And then the mob of idiots on Twitter who just seize on everything and attack everyone. Because this really is defend the hive. For God's sakes, defend the hive.
Yeah.
And we're stuck knowing how this is going to end one way or another. He'll leave. Maybe impeachment, probably not removal. 2020, very likely so. And then all the shit that falls apart and comes out will suddenly become someone else's problem because all the Trump supporters will suddenly become independents who've never heard of Donald Trump.
Well, and Amanda Marcotte owes me $5 this week because she wrote an article in Salon that's republished at Raw Story today about not letting Republicans get away with rebranding after Trump.
Oh, my God. You know who else is cracking wise about, here's what's going to happen? David Frum.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved how I'm sorry. Go ahead.
David Frum, George Bush advisor and speechwriter, and a guy who wrote a couple of glowing books, or at least one glowing book about George W. Bush. You think that guy, however much he might have come out of his complete Republican ownership of his body and soul, mm-hmm. would know better than to say, you know what these crazy Republicans are going to do? They're probably going to pretend this never happened and get him off the hook. And then maybe they'll get a gig.
And then Michelle Goldberg came in. That was the thing. I couldn't remember her name. Michelle Goldberg replied to him and said, no, they're going to pretend Trump wasn't a real Republican.
That's right. And for someone who is now a respected MSNBC contributor and a managing editor of The Atlantic, who
and helped, probably goes to Politicon.
And who helped George Bush nearly destroy this country.
Right.
To say, you know, those kooky Republicans, they're probably going to. It's like.
You think?
You really have. Well, and it's that sense. It's this sense of entitlement.
Yeah.
It's this sense of, I get to do this because I'm on the inside. I'm a member of the Beltway Media. However badly I fuck up in public. Doesn't matter because I'm off the hook. I am pre-approved for everything I'm going to do.
And speaking of Beltway Media.
Yes. Oh, please.
Let's segue right away into an article that both Carolee and Ten Grain sent me.
Yes. Me too. It was like,
you too.
I can't believe this. You should read this.
Yeah. Like, okay. Yeah. And I said on Twitter, tweeted to the author of this article, John F. Harris. He's a senior founding editor at Politico, who's now retiring from that and doing a weekly column. I tweeted to him, good for you. No snark. This is a good confession to make. And this is the kind of thing that we look for mainstream media people to come out and say, this is the way things are, and I'm a part of it, and I'm part of the problem, or have been part of the problem. And suggest some remedies, or at least suggest a perspective that might help to resolve the problem. And the problem is centrism.
Yes.
The article is called One Big Thing the Dems. Now, there's where he's wrong.
Yep.
The one big thing the Dems get wrong about Warren. What he means by the Dems is Rahm Emanuel.
Yes.
He's not talking about you and me and anyone listening to this podcast. He's talking about Beltway insider Democratic war room professionals who are campaigners.
People who yuck it up on on panels with David Brooks about, oh, the crazies on both sides. Isn't it a shame? Yeah.
Left wing crazy people aren't real. Yeah. Okay. So John Harris, I'm going to just read a couple paragraphs from it. A quarter century covering national politics has convinced me that the more pervasive force shaping coverage of Washington and elections is what might be thought of as centrist bias, flowing from reporters and sources alike. It is a headwind for Warren, Sanders, the squad on Capitol Hill, even for Trump. This bias is marked by an instinctual suspicion of anything suggesting ideological zealotry, an admiration for difference splitting, a conviction that politics should be a tidier and more rational process than it usually is. A confession, I've got it, a pretty strong bout, actually. Here's the main reason it might be wrong. The most consequential history is usually not driven by the center. It is clear that Warren, who has so far run the most disruptive and effective campaign of the Democratic race, is ready to divide the country and her party over the proposition that a much more aggressive role for government is needed to bring business to heel and to protect individuals and the global climate from the predations of a free market.
Mm-hmm.
Sanders has won a core of devoted backers animated by the same disdain for centrism.
Yep.
And then his last paragraph is near the end is fundamental societal change comes from people burning with grievances, obsessed with remedies, ready to demolish old power arrangements to achieve their ends. And the thing I think he leaves out of that ending is the part that Chris Hayes brings up in his book, Twilight of the Elites, where this push for remedies and change and the people burning with grievances are the middle class, college educated white people who expected better from their government than they got.
That's right.
And so they pushed government to change. And you talk about entitlement. It's that entitled class that feels they deserve these things that winds up being the burning agent of tearing down the old structures.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that brings up issues of privilege and all kinds of things that we can talk about at length in other podcasts. But I said kudos to him for pointing out his own biases and noting that, you know, the Democratic base, it wants change.
Yes, they want
government to govern.
And they don't want to burn it all down, corrupt duopoly. Yeah. They have a really specific, if you go through any of the candidate, well, almost any of the candidates' plans, they have really specific plans about schools and criminal justice reform and climate change and healthcare and every issue that you care about and I care about and that I assume everyone listening to this podcast cares about. So it's there's no lack of policy available on the left to choose from. This is, I listened to Ilya Mistal this morning on the radio, stealing from me, just blatantly stealing from me.
My TV husband.
I say it in love because we're, you know, we have an open relationship when it comes to TV husbands and wives. But his point was, one you've probably heard in this podcast many times, is that when all of the reasonable people in politics are stuck in one party because the other party is insane, you're going to have disagreements because reasonable people disagree. And there's people in the Democratic Party who are further left than I am. And there's people in the Democratic Party who are way further right than I am and way too obsessively centrist. I am not a centrist. I do not crave centrism because centrism is a mathematical function. It simply says whatever the position is on the right and the imaginary position is on the left, which is usually completely wrong and invented just to create centrism, the exact midpoint between the two is where you should be, period. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter how far right the moves – how far the right moves into crazy town, they'll keep moving the center along so that the midpoint is always the midpoint. That is an act of cowardice. It's an act of laziness. It's where people who don't want to pick a side in a cold civil war, which is what we're having, hide because they don't want to pick a side because picking a side is terrifying. They don't want to admit that the right is as bad as it is. I think all of that is bullshit and toxic, and it has destroyed basically our media. I am a fan of press.
Aren't you waiting for the Republican epiphany to come?
I keep waiting, Blue Gal. Every Christmas, I light a little candle and put it in the window and say, oh, Santa, please bring me the reasonable Republicans that I've heard so much about. And they never fucking show up. Instead, there's a big pile of shit in the living room. And I dig through it going, but there must be a pony in here somewhere. So as I am long on record,
that is a reference to one of the leading candidates, though, in the Democratic Party. Well, Joe Biden is suggesting that we will be able to cross the aisle and get along with Republicans after this election.
And it pains me that he missed the entire Obama administration. It's a pity he didn't play a large part in that administration.
A very large role in the Obama administration.
Might in his mind that, we tried to compromise like a million times, and every time we pulled back a stump. And they called us, you know, insane and a Kenyan communist and so forth. So I know that is how he's wired.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. Once you know how he's wired, you can get around it. You just keep making insane demands and Joe Biden gives you half of what you want. Oh, really? I'd like $7 trillion. You'll give me $3.5 trillion? Great. I want to destroy two Earths. Oh, only one? Okay, we'll just do the one. So it does – that compulsive need – to sell out half of your party every time the Republicans make a ludicrous demand is what got us into this situation.
And that's exactly why I am with Sanders and Warren on health care.
Yes, yes.
I'm going to ask for 1,000 Medicares. Right. And maybe I'll get 500 Medicares. Right. I
want
1,000
Medicares. I want a million
Medicares.
And here's the difference.
$89 trillion for healthcare in the United States. Oh, well, I'm only going to get $3 trillion? Okay.
You know what? I want a quadrillion.
Quadrillion.
I want $1,000 trillion for Medicare.
From
Mexico. I'm not going to take a penny less.
Right.
But that's the difference. I think centrism is an act of political cowardice, and it's also extremely profitable cowardice. What I am willing to talk about is pragmatism.
Yeah.
That once you get to a place where we all can agree, everyone should have healthcare, it should be excellent for everyone, and it should be as inexpensive as possible without being cheap and useless.
Yep.
Then we can all get into the pit and punch each other and fight and argue about how best to achieve that. But you don't start off negotiating by saying, well, of course I'm going to give half of what you want away. Let's just do that up front. That's how we got the Affordable Care Act without a public option. We got it because Joe Lieberman and a couple of other Blue Dog Democrats stabbed us in the back. But the whole ACA argument, it's strangely forgotten that Republicans were given pretty much the ability to amend it any way they wanted.
Right. Right.
140, 150 some odd amendments. The one thing they weren't allowed to do was put in poison pill amendments that would destroy it, because that would be insane. Barack Obama went to their conference in Baltimore, and he stood in front of the entire Republican Party and fielded all the questions they could ever want to ask. And in the end, he got nothing for it. Nothing. Not one fucking Republican voted for it, because obstructing Democrats, owning the libs, is all they know how to do. So I'm a pragmatist, but not a centrist. Secondly, I want to point out that this headwind for Sanders is never a headwind for Republicans.
Right.
That's the part about it that gets undiscussed.
Well, and I noticed that this week with people talking about how the impeachment vote is so partisan. You know what? We never talked about the 60 votes to destroy my health insurance as being partisan.
Oh, no. And let's be clear. Blue Gal's not talking about 60 votes required in the Senate. It means the 60 times the Republican Party voted. 60 times
the Republican Party voted to end the ACA.
Yeah, to take away our health care. Yeah. And that's just lost to history. So there is obviously...
You're very partisan, Driftglass.
You know, I am very partisan. And as we said last week, three cheers for partisanship. The part of this that gets sort of unmentioned but is clearly there is this obsession by centrists with tribalism. Isn't it a shame? The blue tribe and the red tribe and the black tribe and the white tribe and blah, blah, blah. And that's how we're divided, as if there's no actual moral content any position anyone takes. It's just a side you're on. It's just Cubs or White Sox. It's Mets or Yankees. There's no actual there. It doesn't affect anyone's life which position you take. But there is a third tribe, and it's the most rigid and obsessive and ridiculous of all, and that is the centrist tribe.
Right.
The tribe that reduces every argument, every discussion to, well, there's some on the left and there's some on the right, and who knows who's right? Maybe in the middle we'll find a solution.
But they give away the game, Driftglass, so often. Like they did, like Chuck Todd did this week. Do you want to talk about that? Election Eve, Chuck Todd says,
if Republicans in a red state like Kentucky managed to hang on to a Republican governor's position, got no one to blame but Nancy Pelosi. Really, it's all Pelosi's fault.
It's all impeachment's fault if a Republican wins in a red state.
Now, honestly, if anyone else in any public profession that had an outward-facing position said something that spectacularly stupid in front of millions of people,
and was then proven wrong in 24 hours. Right.
If you go, but Chuck Todd is hired to say shit like this by Comcast. That's his job. Yeah. His job is to find the reason why it's always good news for John McCain. That's his job. And that's the force at work. The question I keep asking of anyone who will tell me, and occasionally answers trickle back to me saying, you're right, that's how it works, which depresses the shit out of me, is there is like the dark matter of media, this invisible force that keeps people doing shit that they know is a lie, that we know is a lie, the most their audience knows is a lie, the corporations that prop them up know is a lie. And the question is, why are you continuing to do this? Why must you continue to ache for the non-existent center? Why must you continue to blame non-existent liberal positions as a way to counterbalance actual Republican atrocities? Why? And the answer is always, well, that's just how business is done. I get it. There's a lot of ways businesses are done, but there's a reason for it. There's a person or people or a compact or a cabal or a pact or mutual understanding that says, this is how we're going to run shit. We're never going to hold Republicans responsible exclusively for what they do. And when Republicans actually show their ass in public and make it really clear that they are the cancer on democracy, their party is the problem, we're going to call them Trumpists. And Trumpers.
Yeah.
And it's Trumpism. It's not Republicanism because, you know, I as a Republican, I never believed those things. That was never part of my party, says Joe Scarborough. That's not what my party believed, says every Republican on MSNBC, except it was. It really was. So I'm still looking for someone to step out of the shadows, like, say, a whistleblower, and tell me, why is it that you people, the First Amendment chartered institution, the free press, in this one really important matter, refuses to do the one job the free press is supposed to do, Mm-hmm. Tell the fucking truth to the public. Tell us about the disaster. Tell us about the storm. Tell us about the poison in the water. But you can't tell us about the poison in politics because someone way high up the food chain is holding your career by a thread, saying if you say one fucking word, saying Republicans are exclusively to blame for these problems, we're going to cut you loose, and then you can go have a blog and a podcast like Drift Class.
So Drift Class, let me ask the blogger, podcaster Drift Class a question about
this,
because you have in our notes, you know, the ecstasy of Joe Scarborough over
Bloomberg.
Mike Bloomberg running for president because he's going to be the magic billionaire, right?
God. You know, I don't think you people outside understand what a magnificent piece of man he is. He's got a dick a mile long. Let me tell you, this guy personally, he built the pyramids, Blue Gal. Uh-huh. I don't think you know that. And
there is Bloomberg coming into the race? First of all, he's so late that I don't think he can get on the ballot in the first three contests. I think
doesn't need to, Blue Gal. Doesn't need to. He can buy the state of California out of petty cash. He's got the sucker locked up. Let me tell you, he's a viable candidate. You know why? Because he's fucking rich and he lives in New York. He lives five blocks from Joe Scarborough. And
he can ride in and be on Joe Scarborough every single morning. He doesn't even need to phone it in like Trump did.
Do you remember Inception?
Yeah.
Where they're trying to figure out how to get on the airlines, and the Ken Watanabe says, I just bought the airline.
I bought the airline, and now we have a flight. Let's go.
Simpler that way. Like, Bloomberg could just buy MSNBC, you know, and Joe Scarborough respects two things, money and power. And Bloomberg has both
and
of those.
Keep my pharma stocks and my bank stocks stable. Don't shake up those industries at all, because my stock portfolio depends on it. Yeah.
And you know who had the best take on Mike Bloomberg coming into the race was Elizabeth Warren.
Oh.
Because she tweeted out, she has a billionaire. She says, welcome to the race, Mike. In case you're wondering how this will affect you, she sent over her how will billionaires be affected by my tax increases calculator. Just plug in the numbers and see how much you're going to pay.
And I did love what my TV husband, Ellie Mistel, said about, you know, there are probably maybe 7,400 people in America who will be affected by Elizabeth Warren's billionaire tax. And those guys don't vote in Iowa.
No. Well, they'll just buy Iowa.
Yeah, right. Well,
and I think Jon Favreau, who I'll give credit for being funny, he's a funny guy, said it's really kind of unfair that billionaire Mike Bloomberg can bring to the table resources that run-of-the-mill billionaires like Tom Steyer can't manage.
Right.
You know, if these guys want to put a giant pile of money in the middle of the country and set it on fire to make a fucking point,
why don't they do downstate races?
Because those aren't fun.
The Senate.
Because you have to sit in the big house at the big desk and say, I'm the president and I'm telling you, we're going to have a grand bargain and we're going to cut the... Because that's what they want. That's what all these people ache for. Again, they ache for the good old days of the grand bargain. They're going to bring Joe Lieberman back from the political grave and put him in charge of something. And they want Graham Rudman. They want Kemp. They want Jack Kemp back. And they're going to pay for it. And they're willing to pay an enormous amount of money on the slim chance that they might get it. Because, honestly, Elizabeth Warren scares the shit out of them. I would start off with the theory that we're going to tax you back to the Stone Age.
I'd
start off by saying, you know what? Let's go back to the tax bracket of that noble Republican Dwight David Eisenhower.
Yeah.
Let's tax y'all at 94%. Billionaires get taxed at 94%. Or you can reinvest that money in the economy. But you can't sit on it and you can't just lord it over and you can't buy goddamn elections with it. And that's where you begin the negotiation. You don't begin by begging for crumbs. You say, look, the country is in trouble. We are in very big trouble. We are in pre-World War II, World War II trouble, and we need to mobilize the resources of this country to save this country. And one of the resources we're going to have to tap into is the wealth of a few multi-billionaires who sit atop the economic pyramid, who have profited enormously off of the labor of hundreds of thousands or millions of people. And sorry if you don't like it, but that's what we're going to have to do.
And I think we have to tax companies that buy back their stocks at 110%. You have to pay a penalty for buying back your own stock.
Especially if you take
a tax cut.
With the massive tax cut.
Right.
We're going to have, 9% growth. Maybe 10. I don't know. Numbers get big after that. I'm confused. But at least 20% growth. This $1 trillion tax cut, which accomplished
nothing. No, we were supposed to get, if we got 4% growth, that was going to be awesome.
That was
right?
going to be winning, winning, winning. And 6% was probably what it was going to be. It's going to be amazing. You'll never see anything like it. So much winning.
Steve Mnuchin told me so.
Yeah. And then it came to nothing. Yeah. And we have another $1 trillion for the deficit. And they used it to buy back their stocks.
They used it to buy back their stocks. And now Lindsey Graham says on television, yeah, we have cashed a check with Social Security and Medicare that we can't afford.
Right.
Entitlements are going to have to be reformed, quote unquote.
Uh-huh. Oh, grand bargain.
Grand bargain.
Oh, grand bargain, please. Yeah. Oh, great grand bargain. Again, they're going to disinter Joe Lieberman from his political grave and put him in charge of the cat food commission. And this is what they dream of. This is the world they want. They do not understand anything about life outside the billionaire bubble. And the people who, most of the people in the media, want their approval. You know, Mike Bloomberg can destroy you with a look. So if you're going to survive in the New York media market, you better make sure he's looking at you with a sweet, sweet love in his eye. And so everyone around that table this morning was just like, man, that man is such a hunk of burning electoral fury. You know, don't count that man out. And we're just out here in the country going, wasn't it last election when you people were just killing yourself because there were way too many Republican candidates? Oh, my God.
Yep.
The field's full of people. This is insane. Well, Democrats have several very good candidates. We do not need another one. We do not need two or three more.
Well, but Driftmas, this is what I wanted to ask you as a professional blogger and podcaster, which is, is Bloomberg coming into the race exciting because he's Bloomberg? Or is this exciting because Biden isn't failing to ignite people?
I think there's a problem with the Biden campaign.
Uh-huh.
I think that's pretty self-evident.
Yeah.
I think Joe Biden has lost a step, and however carefully they position
personally,
him.
I don't think he wants to be president. I really don't.
No,
that's my gist of it.
Based on all available visual evidence, he is not up for a long slog and a tough fight.
Mm-hmm.
He just isn't. Hillary Clinton would be, you know. Hillary Clinton would put those gloves lace right back up and get in the ring. She would be ready to go, and I'd be ready to work for her. But that's not going to happen. So the question is, when you have decided that the future of your party is centrism, and the centrism guy is not cutting it, what do you do? Do you actually accept the fact that the rest of the party has sort of moved on and wants to do something different? Or do you go out and find a multi-billionaire who will say, I'll save you. Don't worry. I can spend $1 billion out of my own pocket on ads in California. Screw Iowa. Nobody goes to Iowa. Iowa doesn't exist. I'll go to California, just buy that election, and then I'll be competitive. And that's their salvation. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Nobody, as has been reliably reported, New Yorkers hate Michael Bloomberg.
Yeah, right. Well,
and Michael
Stop and Frisk Bloomberg, right?
Yeah. And outside of New York, it's Michael who?
Yeah.
So Michael Bloomberg did not have his own reality show, was not on The Apprentice. He's just this kind of prissy New York billionaire who thinks that he should be president by an act of God. And that's unless he wants to go out and start eating corn dogs with people who want
too late for sharing, the fair is over.
Yeah, sharing a warm beer with somebody that he wouldn't hire in a billion years.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, what we really want, Blue Gal, is a happy warrior. We want someone who campaigns relentlessly and is puts the knife right in Donald Trump's chest electorally, but is cheerful about it, is happy about it, is hopeful about it. And that's what Elizabeth Warren brings to the campaign. That's what Bernie Sanders brings to the campaign.
Yeah.
And there are other candidates too. This is not an endorsement of anyone. Hey, look, if Joe Biden wins the nomination, I'm a Biden guy.
Right.
Don't get me wrong at all. If Mike Bloomberg buys his way under the table and somehow runs the table and wins, I'm a fucking Bloomberg guy and have been since 1992.
Right.
And and we'll just erase this podcast and pretend it never happened.
It'll be gone like a Hannity tweet.
Right. Whatever. What? But until then, because we are not the New York media and we are not the Beltway media, we are free to speculate all we want about what we would like to have and who we would like to have do it. And Michael Bloomberg is neither of those things.
He's not that person. Neither is Tom DeLay. Tom DeLay? Is it about Dancing with the Stars?
No. Surprisingly, no. Going through my archives, as I do from time to time, I'm not going to read from my archives, but I recall back in the day when Tom DeLay was the hammer. Remember that?
Yes.
Tom DeLay was the hammer. Tom DeLay was a force to be reckoned with in the House. Tom DeLay had the entire Republican Party's balls in a bag. And if you crossed him, he would destroy you. Remember that?
I do.
He was almighty, all-powerful, and could ram through anything he damn well pleased. And here's the thing. Everyone knew he was a drunk, sociopath, lying, racist lunatic. Mm-hmm. Every fucking body knew it. But the entire Republican Party was terrified of crossing him. And there was this, towards the end there, once he started to just show up in public and slurring his words, and it was pretty clear that he's going down hard. There was this very fine political calculation about exactly when do we jump off the train? Because if it's too soon, we'll be run over under the wheels. And if it's too late, we become a DeLay person and go down with him. So when exactly – it had nothing to do with their conscience because Republicans don't really have consciences as normal humans perceive.
It was pure calculation, right?
Pure political calculation based on pure self-preservation. When do we jump off the Tom DeLay train? And we are in exactly that place now. Yeah. Lindsey Graham is going down with the ship. You know, he is just and as we have mentioned, I believe, previously on this podcast, we know how this is going to end. They're all going to say, it wasn't me. I was never there. He was never my guy. I did what I had to do. There's just going to be a million alibis. And it's up to us, who don't have tens of billions of dollars and can't marshal, you know, an entire media corporation to say otherwise, to stop them from doing that this time. Our job is to get Democrats elected and to stop Republicans and the media from weaseling out of responsibility for the mess we are in. Those are our two jobs. And how we do them, again, I'm a pragmatist, is negotiable, but we have to do them.
Yeah, and I think you're seeing a lot of what you're talking about on Fox News as well. Because Hannity is going down with the Trump train.
Yes, he is.
But this morning on Fox and Friends, Ed Henry, who is, you know, a Las Vegas sex machine from 2016, he had an affair with a Vegas quote unquote hostess, and had to take some time off from work to get his life together because it was exposed.
That happens.
He had an incredible sex drive. And but Ed Henry is back, and he is one of the straight news guys at Fox, you know, which is utter bullshit. They are all liars. So just remember that. But Ed Henry was sitting on the couch on Fox and Friends talking about how awesome Jeff Sessions is. That Jeff Sessions was Trump before Trump was ever Trump and was almost too conservative. You know, what they really mean is racist.
Yeah.
You know, that he didn't get a federal judgeship because he was too racist. Mm-hmm. They didn't mention that on Fox and Friends. But Ed Henry gave basically a 5-minute infomercial about Jeff Sessions running for Senate in Alabama. And he was Trump before Trump. And so if you're a true conservative, you're really going to want to go with Jeff Sessions.
Sure, because look at that face. Look at that face.
Look at that little munchkin face, that little Keebler elf. So I thought I watched that and I thought, oh, my gosh, can you imagine how many phone calls Jeff Sessions people, how many Fox people are on the Rolodex of the Jeff Sessions campaign?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All of them.
Lots of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that connection there and all those chits that he's going to collect from Fox News. The relationship that he has with Fox is definitely going to outlast Donald Trump. You have a couple other things you want to talk about. You wanted to congratulate an author, right?
I do. You know, as a fellow writer who has not yet had the time or, frankly, nerve to write a book and watch it fail catastrophically, I would like to send a big shout out to Mark Halperin, who wrote a book, How to Beat Trump, which looks eerily like the book that Rick Wilson is now touting called Beat the Devil, How to Beat Trump, and how to basically tell the Democrats to quit fucking around and be the party I want them to be.
Yeah.
Mark Halperin's How to Beat Trump book sold 502 copies in the first week. 502 copies. Now, you know what? I could sell 503 copies.
Yeah.
I really could. Yeah. If I beg my family to buy them, I can sell 503 copies. And Mark Halperin, TV's Mark Halperin, who got to everybody, who again cranked out the Rolodex and went through every contact he had and said, you got to give me a quote, man. I got to get back in the game. And got quotes from everybody who immediately regretted it because Mark Halperin has sold his book for – has sold 502 copies of his book. I hope he got a huge advance.
Mm-hmm.
Huge. Mm-hmm. Like a – give me $3 million.
Yeah.
And has to pay back all of it. I really do hope so, because Mark Halperin is just a bottom feeder.
He ruined a lot of lives. He did.
And the more he suffers to the point where he either repents or goes and get a job, you know, equivalent to his skill set, upselling hot apple pies at a local McDonald's, perhaps. That's what Mark Halperin's future should be. And 502 copies of his shitty book. I mean, he's going to sit there going, Donald Trump Jr.'s shitty book is outselling my book.
Well, because the RNC is like buying it in massive quantities to give away, right?
That's the thing. And there's no one who will buy Mark Halperin's book in massive quantities to hand out the next CPAC because Mark Halperin. I look forward to him sort of in the very, very back tent of Politicon next year with just crates of his book and a felt pen going, you know, I used to be Mark Halperin.
Right. Now, Dick Glass, I tried to call in to Sam Cedar's show while you were out of town. I hope you're not mad at me for that.
Whoa. I'm out of town for one day. And my wife's like, hey, how's it going, Sam? Remember me? Sam, so what you doing?
And I didn't get on because he had too many callers. But I wanted to thank him publicly for covering the rebranding efforts that Milo Yiannopoulos and Charlie Kirk are doing for their images, to soften their image and become more centrist.
Right.
Charlie Kirk had a gay black man on stage with him, you know, rapping, sitting on stools, talking about how we move the country forward and stuff. And Sam played a clip of this where this man in the audience, a Charlie Kirk audience, had a rosary wrapped around his hand, and he was insisting on asking how anal sex helps us win the culture wars.
Well, that's just true. That's just true.
Anal sex always helps you win the culture wars.
It always works. Everyone says it.
And Charlie Kirk was sitting next to a gay black man who's also a conservative, who also wanted to say, well, why don't you ask me that question? Let's ask me that question directly, you know. And Charlie Kirk rejected the premise of the question. So that was the end of the clip that Sam Cedar played.
To be fair, there's an entire chapter in Mark Halperin's book, How to Beat Trump, on anal sex.
Anal rosaries. Sex and winning the culture wars against rosaries, right.
A whole chapter on it.
But, you know, these rebranding efforts, it's the canary in the coal mine. When you see Milo Yiannopoulos outing Richard Spencer for being anti-Jewish, that wasn't exactly outing.
You're not with the band anymore. You're not with the band. And we are all on the outside watching the rats fight among themselves.
Honestly, who's going to get out each other crap? As bad people, right?
Yeah.
No, there's all bad people.
there's one more seat on the life raft. No, that's not the life raft. That's the boat that takes you across the river Styx to hell.
Right.
And you're all going to go on it, and you're all going to hell together because you're all just fucking bad terrible people.
And the idea that Milo Yiannopoulos is now the good guy. No, he's not.
Well, you know how effective every cop show, you know, you and I have been watching Jim Gardner.
We've been watching Rockford Files from day one, from the beginning, right?
The old good Nazi, bad Nazi thing is a classic, classic interrogation technique. You know, there's the Nazi who wants to help you, and, you know, and the Nazi who's not so good, not so nice.
The henchman, right?
The henchman Nazi. And that's what they're been. And I wish them all the luck in the world. I wish them all the luck they deserve.
But it's the canary in the coal mine to notice that it's these guys who really need to scrape to make money and get attention.
Well, there's no more room.
And exactly. Yeah. And many of them have been kicked off of social media for being awful, awful people. And if you've been kicked off of Twitter for being awful in that regard, like kicked off. When Jack is really trying to make sure he doesn't delete every Republican from Twitter. You have to scrape to get back on some way, have an audience somehow. And this is canary in the coal mine stuff. So
let's face it, Bill Maher only has 4 seats at that table.
And that's right.
He can only squeeze in 1 Nazi every week.
Dead to me. Yeah. Dead to me. Yeah. Bill Maher is dead to me.
Yeah.
Not just for the anti-vaxxing stuff he did last week.
No.
Since he had Milo Yiannopoulos on his show thinking it's cute.
Yeah. Well,
thinking it's cute and will get an audience and be good television. Dead to me. And dead to me.
And he spent the last 20 years rehabbing Ann Coulter's career every time she drove into a tree.
Because
and
it's good television. Yeah. It's good. So, you know, it's the, yeah, no, no. But this is, you know, their efforts are nothing compared to what we have coming in terms of a very well-funded, massive effort to rebrand the Republican Party as something other than Donald Trump.
Yes. And we know it's coming. This is the thing.
We know it's coming.
You know, we little bloggers and podcasters and our wonderful listeners out there, you all know this is coming. You all know exactly how this is coming. You're watching Jaws for the 45th time. You know
what's coming. Robert Shaw is going to get bitten
in half. You just know that's going to happen. And you know the shark's going to blow up. You know exactly. So our job in our own little ways, among our family and friends, you've got to hold people accountable. You've got to hold people accountable for what they said and did. You're living through some of the worst times in American history right now. This is not the Great Depression. It's not World War II, but this is a catastrophe for this country. Internationally, nationally, for our image of ourselves. We elected a fucking monster. And a third of this country stands firmly behind evil and is proud of it. And it is vitally important that we hold these people accountable and not let them walk away from the disaster they created again. Because if they get away with it again, the next time it will be worse. The next time
it'll
when President
Tom Cotton,
Cotton,
as you said, Tom Cotton's going to be president of the United States. So just and then democracy's over. So, all right, Driftglass, we got to rush into the news roundup.
Let's go. Well, today's the day that transcripts for Trump's ex-Russia and ex-Ukraine experts were released, which confirmed everything the whistleblower said.
A federal judge overturned the Trump administration's conscience rule that would have made it easier for doctors and other healthcare workers to refuse abortion care on religious or moral grounds.
And today, acting chief of staff and everything else, Mick Mulvaney, decided to blow off a subpoena and refuse to testify in the House impeachment hearings, because that's what innocent people always do, Blue Gal.
According to the federal prosecutor's opening statement at the trial of Roger Stone, this is going to be a circus, people.
Yeah.
Stone lied to Congress about his efforts to contact WikiLeaks during the 2016 campaign because, quote, the truth looked bad for Donald Trump, unquote.
Yeah, it always does. Next week is public impeachment trial week, so get your popcorn and booze ready.
Yeah, it's going to be testimony in the House Impeachment Committee on TV. Jim Jordan knew.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he did.
He knew about the abuse of wrestler students.
He did, and did nothing about it. And he's turned that into a profession of ignoring blatant abuse directly in front of him. He's very good at this.
And now he's on the impeachment committee as of today.
Well, in honor of public impeachment trial week, Turkish President Erdogan will visit the White House. So that'll be exciting.
And thank you to everyone who corrected my pronunciation a few weeks ago of Erdogan. I appreciate it. Senate Republicans are discussing whether to use the impeachment inquiry to throw mud at Joe Biden and also subpoena Hunter Biden.
Yeah, of course they are. After prayerfully meditating on the possibility of going to jail for Donald Trump, Gordon Sondland's temporary amnesia suddenly disappeared. And he recalled that, yes, by golly, there was a quid pro quo linking the U.S. to Ukraine with an investigation into Joe Biden and his son. Specifically, that Ukraine, quote, would likely not receive military aid until it publicly committed to investigating the 2016 election and Joe Biden. The whole point was to get him to stand up at a microphone and say, investigation, Biden and son. That was it. Didn't even have to happen. They just had to have something to hang their hat on.
And they wrote a script for him to say that.
Yep.
Yeah. The House committees in charge of the Trump impeachment inquiry plan subpoenaed acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney for testimony, and he's not showing up.
This week, Donald Trump, you've heard of him before, he's been on TV a lot, had to pay $2 million to settle the New York Attorney General civil lawsuit against the Trump Foundation and his children.
Because he used his foundation as a piggy bank. Yeah.
Because that's what honest people do.
I think this was my favorite story of the week.
Oh, God. Because it was so pathetic and creepy and wrong.
Lindsey Graham, I'm refusing to read any of the transcripts released this week.
Yes. This is the same guy who demanded that they be released.
Yes,
and said, right. Well, you know, if there was some hint of a quid pro quo, then I'd be concerned. And of course, Lindsey Graham.
La, 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 right. La, la. I'm right. Not even going to read them because they're all baloney. No.
No. Head down, ass up. Lindsey Graham. Yay. The Trump administration has now formally withdrawn our country from the Paris Climate Agreement.
If you need a reason to vote in November for the Democrat, vote blue no matter who.
Yep.
Swallow your pride, vote blue no matter who. That's it right there. Phone records show that Trump made at least 6 phone calls to a woman who says he sexually assaulted her at the Beverly Hills Hotel.
Mm-hmm. 62% of Trump supporters say there is nothing Trump could do that would cause them cause him to lose their support. And I believe all of them are on Twitter today and mad at me.
They're mad at you for calling them out. Yes. I do like how you're just replying that I don't care what you think.
I don't care. I don't care what you say. A lot of them have a fetish about, you know, Republicans were freed the slaves. You know, Lincoln. Yeah, I live 3 miles from where he's buried. By the way, here's a picture of Barack Obama with the Lincoln impersonator going, and Lincoln impersonator saying, we have a black president. Wow, my party must be doing great. So that sort of crystallizes all the shit that I or Kevin Kruse could say. Because these people either know better and they've just been trained to say stupid shit, or they don't know any better and they're basically human cinder blocks.
No, they've been given one line speaking points that they believe will help them own the libs.
Right. And I don't.
Yeah.
And I don't care.
If you don't care.
Your opinion is irrelevant.
That eliminates it. Right.
Right.
An attorney for the whistleblower whose complaint is at the center of the impeachment inquiry has issued a cease and desist letter to the White House.
Yeah.
Over Trump's attacks against the whistleblower.
Donald Trump's accounting firm, not him, but his accounting firm, must now turn over 8 years of Trump's personal and corporate tax returns to Manhattan prosecutors.
Well, that is, we're waiting to hear if the Supreme Court is going to take up that case.
Yeah.
Everyone in the legal community who is sane says that the Supreme Court will not take it up because it's cut and dried.
You want to touch this? Not with a barge pole.
Nope.
We're not here right now. Tell them we're not home.
We're not home. Mm-hmm. Trump ordered Attorney General William Barr to hold a press conference and say that he didn't break the law during his July 25th call with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. And Barr declined to do it. There are some things that William Barr will not do, apparently.
Yes.
That was the remarkable thing about that.
That was him and Lindsey Graham. You know, Lindsey Graham, there's no bottom. There's no bottom to what Lindsey Graham will do at all. Bill Barr just decided, you know what? I think I'm full. I think we've reached the point where
I can't go on television and do this. Yes.
Even my children will throw my shit out the window and set it on fire if I do this. So, you know what? And of course, the stink of, oh shit, we're all going down.
Yeah.
Is thick in the air in DC. And
there
now,
is desperation. Yep.
Former national security advisor and resistance hero, John Bolton.
No, he's not.
No, he's not. He's a lunatic. Is willing to testify to the House impeachment inquiry as long as a court orders him to do it and apparently drags him in and sits him down. Then he'll do it. Because that's what heroes do. They make a court order you to tell the truth.
The $500,000 that Rudy Giuliani was paid to investigate Trump's political rivals came from the Long Island attorney investing in Fraud Guarantee, a company owned by that Ukrainian-American businessman.
I just never get tired. There's a book by someone named Anonymous, but not the last Anonymous, and not the Anonymous before that, and not the author of the Anonymous op-ed columns that keep popping up in newspapers. This is a different Anonymous. Is a senior Trump administration official who says that high-level White House aides were certain that Mike Pence would support using the 25th Amendment to have Trump removed from office as long as nobody talked about it.
Yeah.
As long as someone else actually pulled the trigger, he'd be for it. I'm with Charlie Pierce on this.
Yeah.
Expect me to mock whoever this is for their cowardice behind it.
Yeah.
Charlie Pierce, who figured out that it was Mark Felt before anybody else did.
Yep.
And who figured out that it was Joe Klein before anybody else did.
Yep. Does he think it's Reince Priebus?
He doesn't say, but he says, I will mock whoever it is. Expect me to mock whoever it is.
Yeah. And don't buy this book.
No.
Rachel Maddow read from it, and that's interesting. And you can knit to listening to Rachel Maddow read from it.
Right.
But don't give this person any money for writing this shit.
No.
They should have come out 3 years ago and said what was going on and demanded that a 25th Amendment be passed. All right. Trump and the Apprentice creator have discussed shooting the Apprentice White House after Trump leaves office. We prefer the idea of lock up with the stars.
All right. And Bill Taylor, who is the top U.S. diplomat in Ukraine, told House impeachment investigators that it was his, quote, clear understanding, unquote, that military aid could not be sent to Ukraine until the country pursued investigations that could benefit Trump, according to a transcript of his testimony that was made public. He quote, sat in astonishment, unquote, during a July 18th call after a White House Office of Management and Budget official said that Trump had ordered a hold on military assistance to Ukraine. Guilty as sin. All of these people are guilty as sin, and most of them, I think, are going to go down.
Yep.
The only person who's immune from consequences really is Donald Trump, and the only reason he's immune is a guy named Mitch McConnell.
Yep. Keep the faith, people. Next week's going to be a barn burner with a televised testimony. So,
holy crap, you know,
just keep the faith, and we're with you. Love you guys. Have I said that lately? Have I told you lately, podcast listeners, that I love you?
Yes, these are great folks, and we really do appreciate it.
Each week, we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is really something. This is Simba. Simba is an actual lion, and this photo was taken by Jeff, a podcast listener who visited Tanzania. And he wrote us and said, in the Serengeti, rule number one is don't get out of the truck. Similarly, I realize how much I depend on you guys to help ferry us through the current war of all against all to which our misleaders are constantly directing us. Rule number one in America should be stay on the pro-left bus, which is what I plan to do. I am going to Patreon today and pledging my $5 a month, which if 9 other people do the same, should cover your hosting bill each month. Oh. Consider this the start of my campaign to sustain the Professional Left podcast. Oh, aren't you special? Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
And while Simba eats his prey on the Serengeti, your little lion will love the taste of freshly poured cat food, our fake sponsor. Whether you serve pet store perfection or dollar store dreck, your pet will sit on the kitchen floor and demand that the food they eat is only freshly poured. Freshly poured. Freshly poured. Oh, my Lord, it's freshly poured. And you can visit Simba at our Facebook page or website. You can send your internet kitty or other pet to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, or you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware, if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or, say it with me, U.S. Postal Service, go Postal Unions. Yeah. Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. Their busy, busy season is coming, and we are with you guys. Mm-hmm. Go Postal Unions. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. We got coffee from Bard, as we said.
Yeah.
If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us by donating to our podcast. This is not charity. This is our job and a labor of love. And we love hearing from you, and we're grateful for your $5 contribution or more if you can afford it. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, proleftpod.com, for details. We have PayPal, postal address information, Patreon, GoFundMe, all of it is there at proleftpod.com. Please share our show on social media, and thank you for doing that. And one more note. Science Fiction University is going to be released Thanksgiving weekend.
Yes.
The episodes that we have in the can, that's how we've decided to do it this time around, at least for this season. We're going to release our shows Thanksgiving weekend. Mm-hmm. And then again, Christmas week, we will release some more shows.
And then gather your feedback.
Feedback. See what you guys think of it. Mm-hmm. Those of you that like listening to that. And if you don't, then just skip that week and come back to us. We'll be back with political podcasting the following week.
Yeah. We're really trying to find out if this separate podcast, non-political podcast, is sustainable, because it's a labor of love, but it's also labor.
It's a lot of work. It's a lot more than just, I mean, Drift Class and I cover politics for our blogs, and I write for Crooks and Liars, and so we're watching news 24/7 anyway, and podcasting about it is something that we like to do. reading science fiction books and watching science fiction movies and then really kind of coming together with a show about that is a whole different activity. And it's fun, but it's a lot of work. So we want to make sure that from your feedback that we really can take this on. So thank you very much. Hey, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties want to remind Republicans that their vote for Sean Spicer also legally counted as a vote for Trump 2020, so they could just stay home next year and enjoy all the winning.
Are they going to put out a Facebook ad saying that, Driftglass?
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2018, DGBG Productions Incorporated.